breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition, Hump Day, if you still use that term. Middle of the week, for those of us who work Monday through Friday, that would be me. Monday through Friday, 9 to noon, right here in WTMJ. Producer Brandon in the producer's chair after a stint as big-time sports guy in the morning, Wisconsin's Morning News with Vince and the vacationing Eric Bilstead. I think I've gotten all the formalities out of the way. Well, one more, actually. We're going to get to this topic at 9:35, but I want to give you a heads up. So lots of the conversation on the latest mass shooting, school shooting story, this one from Nashville. Private Christian school, three kids dead, three adults. Is a hard pivot. Well, two things are happening. A hard pivot to mental health versus guns. And many lawmakers saying not much we can do here. Hands up, price of freedom, all that. So we'll get to that at 9:35. But I made it my show poll today. You can find it on Twitter, and I just found out, actually, this is kind of breaking news on the Twitter front, that I may not be able to do show polls after the 15th of April. Apparently, they're making some changes there. Elon Muskie, to use a Northwoods twist on his name, has basically said, unless you're verified, you can't respond to polls, which would kind of shoot down the idea of just anyone being able to contribute to the poll question. So we may have to find a different alternative. Maybe, I know Facebook cut that down a year or so ago. So we'll figure out something. Maybe we'll just do it on the old National Bank talk and text line. But as long as it's viable, we're going to do it. And today's poll has to do with that question, which, as I said, we'll get to at 9:35. After the most recent mass shooting, school shooting at a school in Tennessee, some of the debate on gun violence has turned to the question of the relationship between mental illness and gun ownership. Should we have stronger laws on the books when it comes to mental health? Give you a few choices. No, not the cause. Yes, save lives. Number three, it's the guns always. Or comments, and I've already got half a dozen comments, so, and almost 200 votes, so well done you. That's our 9:35 topic. But I want to start with something that I didn't get a chance really to talk about much yesterday other than a brief mention. And it's the big announcement about the Microsoft data center that was announced for the Foxconn site. I broke that story along with the Milwaukee Business Journal and others in the markets. Corey Hess from the Journal Sentinel, who wrote the piece that I'm going to refer to here, on the latest news on the Foxconn development site. So let me give you an overview from a former elected's perspective, now radio host, talking about something like this. The biggest misconception, and maybe this was because of the selling job by Donald Trump and former Governor Walker, that this was all about Foxconn. Well, yeah, that was the story at the beginning because that's the entity that was at play. But this was never just about Foxconn. This was a data technology corridor slash hub sites, given the size of it. I think it's over 1,000 acres. And the latest piece, Microsoft piece, would be 315 acres, which is a large chunk. That's always been the long-term play. That's where the viability of the funding, the tax incremental district, or financing, if you want to use that term, TIF, that's what it relies on, to have these big companies come in with some local investment, some state dollars. That's how things happen. And somebody said to me, well, why don't they just come in? Why do we have to give them money? Because that's not how the real world works. You could almost point to any store in Wisconsin, whether it's IKEA, Northwestern Mutual in Franklin, all started with this initial aid slash tax incremental district slash financing. That's how this stuff happens, folks. It's a investment in the future. This is where the rubber meets the road, and this is where most people, including the NIMBYs, not in my backyard, don't understand the big picture. They like looking at fields. And to those people, I often say, you like the field so much, you and your friends get together and you purchase it. That's not how the real world works, folks. Those property owners, sometimes individuals, sometimes corporate, investment companies, they get to decide with the assistance, in some cases, of a local community. So what are we talking about here? It sounds like it's a data center. What does that mean? We're not sure yet. Other than a massive investment in dollars, $1 billion project, 315-acre parcel in Mount Pleasant. 855-616-1620 if you'd like to join the conversation, by the way. Old National Bank talk and text line. Is there heartburn? Is there pain? Every major development has all of these things. And often it lingers for a long time, whether it's a business park, whether it's a retail development. There's always some people that don't want to sell, and sometimes you build around them, sometimes you don't. You make them an offer, as they say in the movies, I'm making an offer you can't refuse. That's the reality, folks. I understand there's a group of the population in any city, large or small, who kind of likes it the way it is. But the hard reality, and even diehard conservatives should understand this, with a frozen tax levy, the only way you can raise the amount of money you need to operate a city is if you have growth. Growth means these kinds of projects. This is a large example of that, a significant example, but there's large and small. So given that budget economic reality, this is why these things must happen, because the cost of government, this is something I've been hammering for years, the cost of government doesn't go down. Salt costs more for your highways and roads. Contracts with your garbage company. Contracts with your employees, public safety employees. They go up. They don't go down. No one's making less money. And the reality, if you talk to any local leader, which I have, including on this show, those who are more liberal-leaning, those who are more conservative-leaning, they all say the same thing. This can't continue. It's the ugly side of Act 10, because you have a reality, as I said, that's unsustainable. Did it control some excess spending? You bet it did. That's why I supported it. But I also realized at the time, which is something you almost have to hammer somebody over the head with, it's not sustainable over time. The cost of government keeps going up. So what are communities doing? They're doing projects like this. This should be a celebration if it happens. Not a, oh, I heard that same story from Foxconn. As much as people want to rail on Foxconn, it's still a viable entity. They have benchmarks they have to meet. They met those benchmarks, albeit renegotiated, but they've met them. And because of that, they've gotten millions of dollars from the state of Wisconsin. Is it the job mecca they promised? Absolutely not. That is a negative, a check mark on not getting the job done. And that is something you certainly can be angry about. That's why I'm always careful with local leaders, developers. Careful what you promise. Careful what you're telling the local community and the public what you're going to do here. All that being said, if you have the ability to bring in a company as strong as Microsoft, if you don't think there's a number of communities in this state that would say, we'd welcome you with open arms, you're not paying attention. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. I've given you the background of why these things matter. The reality, which unfortunately not enough people know, of what budgeting is like in communities across the state, large and small. I managed a budget for 5 years as a local leader. I talk to local leaders almost every day on and off the show. And to a person, every one of them is saying the same thing. We need developments, and we have to figure out shared revenue and our bottom line, because if the levy's frozen, which, again, a lot of us supported, at some point, less employees, less services is going to be an ugly reality for the citizens of any community, and they're going to rise up and be angry about it. Do we have an answer for them? This kind of development is one of the answers. Quick break. Large development announcement in Racine County, Mount Pleasant. The county executive, Jonathan Delagrave, and village president, David DeGroots, who is up for re-election, I believe, next week. said this: Microsoft was attracted to this location because it was prime for development. Through local investments, we have transformed this area of Mount Pleasant and equipped it with the infrastructure necessary to support a major investment by Microsoft. That last piece, before I get to the phone lines here, that matters. Because one of the things I hear is, oh my God, all the money invested in infrastructure. Same story with Oak Creek and Drexel Avenue Interchange. First interchange in like 40 years or whatever in Milwaukee County. Yeah, it's a gamble you take to invest in your community to understand that when you do big things like that, you have the potential. Drexel Town Square, new downtown, doesn't exist without that interchange. The viability of IKEA and that surrounding property, east and west of the freeway on I-94, doesn't exist without that interchange. Why the governor came there for the groundbreaking. That's why the city of Oak Creek invested in that project. Looking at the big picture is hard for some people to do. Trust me. Because more often than not, what I get is, I kind of like it the way it is. I like it quiet. You know, and there's places you can have that life. I've driven everywhere in the state, almost every highway. There's plenty of places you can have that life if you want it. But for communities struggling to meet their budgets, given a frozen tax levy, the only way they can do that is with growth. Mike joins us from Illinois. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show. Good morning. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, brother. Good to talk to you.
Always.
I don't know if you made the connection, but Brandon was playing Roll with the Changes by REO Speedwagon.
I did. He's a very subtle dude, isn't he? Or not so subtle.
Very much so. But that was my first concert. But anyway, I digress. So you're absolutely right. I mean, you can't have it both ways. If you want your community to grow and not be stagnant and have frozen taxes, you have to raise the revenue somehow. As you said, prices continue to go up everywhere. That being said, I think there are ways to cut some taxes that, you know, seem like I'm not a big fan of, you know, public aid. I think people should have to, you know, support themselves, pull their weight. And I think there's too much of that. But without that, you do have to attract new businesses to raise revenue. And that's the only way. So I agree with you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. Look, I don't just say things for no reason or because I think it's what you want to hear. I tell you what you need to hear. You need to hear this is the reality in Wisconsin. When you can get all the local leaders in this state on one side of an issue, like shared revenue and the frozen tax levy, I'm talking left, left, and right, right, folks. Matter of fact, the last group to understand the reality, this is people that should know better, which is the legislature. Some of those folks don't even understand it. The popularity of the frozen tax levy is a vote getter. Freeze my taxes? Yeah, I'll sign up. Who wouldn't? But at the same time, people have vision for communities. They understand what could be. I'll go back, personal history. One of the things that frustrated people in the city I lived in, Oak Creek, was you had to drive to 76th Street to get anything. And then Target arrived, and Kohl's arrived. I think I had the order reversed, but you get the picture. And then restaurants came. And then you had a new downtown. Are there going to be more cars in the street? You bet there are. And if communities are smart, you design your roadways, change your traffic patterns to meet those demands. That's modernization. That's keeping up. I understand the NIMBY argument. Who wouldn't want to look at a field of birds and deer? But that's not the reality the cities face. That doesn't make your budget work. I wanted to read a little bit from Foxconn because they're part of this story, right? Their piece now hopefully will be connected to Microsoft on a different part of that property. The property's owned by Mount Pleasant, by the way. They said this, Foxconn Technology Group, the collaboration with Microsoft and local government demonstrates Foxconn's partnership with others to further the goals and intentions of creating a science and technology hub. As a result of Foxconn's presence, Mount Pleasant has undergone a transformation of infrastructure that continues to support potential business for additional Foxconn production. Foxconn has invested over $1 billion. Right now they're manufacturing data servers for tier one customers. So, yeah, I get the Foxconn angst. Did they bring all those jobs? No. And that is frustrating. That's why the deal with the state was renegotiated, which is smart to do. If you have promises, you have to keep those promises. If you don't, well, we're going to renegotiate those terms. From the old National Bank talking text line, 855-616-1620. Hey, Steve, it was all about Foxconn. They were going to hire how many thousands of people, and they were going to make a huge amount of money, and it was all a scam. It's not a scam. Circumstances changed. Was it overpromised? Probably. But don't measure the success of a project, especially ones that like this, big mega projects, in terms of years. They're measured in terms of decades. That's the short-term versus long-term problem we have in this state and elsewhere. There's always two things you have to address when they're talking about development, violence, whatever it is. There's a short-term solution and a long-term solution, right? Short-term for development, you got to get them in the door. Long-term, tax incremental districts and financing, it's part of the way you make that happen. And I'll close with this, and thanks for all the text. If you don't think the corridor between Chicago and Milwaukee is going to be changing in the next few decades, I don't know what to tell you. It's centrally located, easy to get to. People who move here for those jobs, however many jobs there are, have a quality of life and a cost of that quality of life that's better than most places in the country. That's with the tax structure we currently have. If it evolves and changes, which some people would like to do, and I'm not in disagreement with some of those ideas, it gets even better. That's the reality. So enough with the Foxconn burn. We get it. You don't like it. People are always going to be displaced. But don't come here and cry that somebody got their house moved. They were well compensated. Extremely well compensated. I'll squeeze Scott in from Greendale quickly before the break. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Steve. I just wanted to make it clear. Remember, you know, I think any good developer and any good businessman or businesswoman, I should say, has, you know, backup plans. When Foxconn was going up, I remember Walker was just getting grilled, you know, and saying, hey, well, Foxconn has this history. Mount Pleasant was getting grilled. Foxconn has this history of basically utilizing.
Acknowledge that,
and
yes.
And overpromising.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. And he even said, hey, well, you know what? Now we've invested in this beautiful land, and we'll get another big company to go in. So I think we have to. And, of course, now Microsoft is interested because that investment was initially made for Foxconn, but didn't work out. So I guess my point is time to move past Foxconn. The reality is business doesn't always project the way business is going to go. You know, it's a real-time dynamical change out there, but I think it's still all in all a win.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Scott. And another piece of this, I think I tweeted this out last month. There's going to be a big push to manufacture semiconductors, chips, in the United States. Who's got the biggest pieces of land with infrastructure in place? Oh, maybe that piece of land between Chicago and Milwaukee located along I-94. You think that might matter when these big companies are choosing those sites? I think it might. Something to think about as we take a break and go to the news. News is next.
Hey, all of you radio listeners. This is Max, and I'm on vacation, and I found a little time to squeeze in a joke of the week. How much does it cost a pirate to get his ears pierced? A buccaneer. Back to the Steve's Cafeta Show.
Oh, he's getting good. He, on vacation, he's producing content. Young Max, 7-year-old Max. I can't even beat that. And he had enthusiasm and energy. Thank you, young Max, my oldest grandson, for that brief humor break. I'm going to pivot from that because this is a serious topic I'm going to talk about next, and I'll give you a second or two to obviously think about what happened in Nashville. And these aren't news stories. Obviously, we've talked about mass shootings at schools way more than I want to talk about, probably more than you want to hear. But at some point, as I say, and you can join the conversation at the old National Bank talking text line 855-616-1620. Talking's not good enough. nor is the strategy, which I'm hearing now that some leaders don't even want to talk about it. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, or I'm essentially characterizing their response. Price of living in America, folks, that's what happens. Not going to talk about it. Now we're not going to fix it, according to one congressman. So when did we not, like, consider problem solving as part of a elected official's duties, or just problem solving for all of us? When did that become a non-starter, a non-thing? Who lives their lives that way? When you have a problem personally, you try to fix it. If you have a problem with your budget at home, you try to rectify that by getting a different job, asking for more money, to getting a second side hustle or gig or job. That's kind of how you would respond to that. But when it comes to national government, specifically when it comes to mass shootings, not much we can do here. And, you know, even the good guys with guns thing's been twisted now. So it's not about the criminal involved here. It's just about the police response, which was magnificent in Nashville. Horrific in Uvalde. That's not the good guys, bad guys argument. That argument used to be, we want a lot of good guys, not law enforcement folks, just regular citizens to help us maintain law and order. Well, that's not happening. Because how do I know that? Because we have a rise in mass shootings, 130 this year already, and the latest, of course, in Nashville. So one of the responses I got when I asked a question about mental health and its role, and just from I'm not a psychiatrist, but a layman's perspective, not a mental health professional, and having watched the video from Nashville specifically, if someone decides on their own to buy 7 weapons, I think bring 3 of them, including some pretty significant firepower, into a school, shooting through two doors, glass doors, which may be a thing of the past, short-term answer, but maybe, and then injures, kills students, staff, teachers. That's all the definition I need for mental health or mental illness. That's all I need. And I understand that's not the qualifier the professional use. I frankly don't care. That's all I need. Now, here's where it gets tough. I looked it up. Under federal law, because you can block someone from buying a gun, believe it or not, in this country with 400 million plus guns, you can't block someone from buying a gun. Although there's a heck of a lot of legislators who are working in the opposite direction, which if you're saying we don't have enough guns, what planet are you living on? So here's the federal law. A person can be tallied in a database and barred from purchasing or possessing, important distinction, a firearm due to a mental illness under these two conditions. If they're involuntarily committed to a mental hospital, which is very hard to do, or if a court or government body declares them mentally incompetent. That's it. Now, I've talked to enough parents of parents who have children or young adults who have serious mental health issues, who have been violent, who can get zero help and can't get to this point where they could actually have their kids or young adults on a list. And frankly, the response from the mental health community has been disappointing as well. Don't stigmatize our individuals who are suffering. They have every right to have a gun. Really? Is that in their best interest, or is that a talking point? Because it seems more like a talking point. Why do I bring this up? Because far too often after these events, which are, and I don't want to go through the cycle because it's the same every time, thoughts and prayers, we got to do something, here's some proposals, speeches made, maybe a bill is presented, never gets a hearing or any votes, and then slowly dies away, and I use the word dies on purpose, until the next shooting, which unfortunately is on an ever-increasing basis, which is in this country, the United States, happens at a more frequent rate, and we have more mass shootings than we have days in the year this year. That, by definition, is a problem. And I'll say it again, because I'm going to say this every day that I talk about this. If you hear a talking head, a squawking head, or read something that says we don't have a mass shooting problem in this country, immediately throw that piece of paper away or stop listening to what you're listening to, because they are part of the problem. That's not a real point of view. That's a fake point of view based on a political talking points. Understand that, and you'll be smarter on this situation. So, why this matters? We have a decision to make in this country. And I don't want to make this about guns because, frankly, I don't think there's much we can do. I said this yesterday. I'll say it again today. If somebody can't get an AR-15, you want to ban those kind of weapons, they'll find a different weapon and do the same thing. Now, there is an argument to be made, fair argument, I think, that you can kill more people more horrifically with a gun like an AR-15 than you can with other weapons. That's a fair point. That's why there's a call for action in many places to ban those kinds of weapons. It's not a hunting situation. Those are all stupid arguments. It's a military-style weapon with the ability to horrifically damage the human body on a very, very high-powered, rapid basis. That's what it is. Are they fun to shoot? Yeah, I shot one in a range once. They're awesome. Yeah. Do I own one? Absolutely not. I don't need it. I'm not a collector. I have 7 guns. In my case, all hunting weapons. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talking text line. I would argue that state after state should be looking at their mental health laws and saying if a parent or a loved one recognizes a problem, they should be on a fast track, be able to go to a judge or a law enforcement agency, sheriff's department, local police department, and say, look, please, 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 we have an issue here. You have to document, of course. Have you sought treatment? Have you done the things, demonstrated why this is a concern? But that should be a allowable situation that says, you know what, this person should not be allowed to buy a gun. Do you agree or disagree? Because I know some of you disagree. Old National Bank talking text line, wide open. Phone, text. We'll do that after this on WTMJ. Talking about the mental health piece of mass shootings, school shootings. Texter says, well, if it's so easy, why haven't we done it already? When did I say it was easy? What's easy in this country? We can't even figure out border policy after like 4 decades. Nothing easy about it. I'm saying if the mission statement of people who don't want to do anything about guns, magazines, ability to kill people quickly, then we certainly have to look at other things, other avenues. One of those is mental health. And look, I don't want to bash all mental health, mental illness, folks who are dealing with that reality, families who are dealing with that reality. But look, when are we going to get past the talking part of these arguments? And again, I'm going to make this point because this frustrates me. When I see a Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, refuse to answer questions about this, there's no option for not answering questions. You're the Speaker of the House of Representatives. You have to make yourself available. You have to answer direct questions from the press. It's not a dictatorship, my friend. Not a friend, but I just used that term. You don't get to decide that anymore. And if an elected official in this state or in this country doesn't have an answer to the question of why you have so many mass shootings, other than to say stupid things like it's not a problem, it's not real, it's media generated, which frankly in my world makes you an idiot, you better answer the questions. It's not optional. When did this become a reality in the state of Wisconsin as well, where elected officials only have to answer the people that agree with them or voted for them? When was that the reality? Who made that decision? Yet it happens every day. Not good enough, folks. Not good enough. For the 920, I have 2 AR-15s, one for coyote hunting, the other one is for fun. Yes, I totally agree with you, Steve. The mental health aspect needs to be part of the background check. Absolutely. I have a lot of friends who are, I call them gun enthusiasts. I mean, they have many different kinds of weapons, which is fine because they're not criminals. But I have zero tolerance for people that sell guns to criminals knowingly. And trust me, wink, wink, nod, nod, they know. And make a nice little side hustle, maybe their main hustle, on selling all those firearms. Again, wink, wink, nod, nod, no background checks. Happens every day in this country. The only way you're going to stop this is to have multiple answers to the problem. Short term, fortify schools. Sorry, you're going to have to. I don't care if you don't like it. That's what's going to have to happen. Harden doors. In school, school resource officers who are armed. And, you know, school districts, I don't want to beat up on you. We're not letting you make that decision anymore. You make bad decisions and bad choices. It's led to an explosion of violence in schools. Let's be honest. And school board members who support this ban, all I can say to you is, one, you are very naive, and two, you shouldn't be serving on a school board. That's my hardened take on it. Just like kicking out kids should also be an option. Stop trying to save everybody. Some kids don't belong in school. There's other options. We should make those available to that student, but there's a lot of other options, including, by the way, the U.S. military. Now, they're not going to take knuckleheads, but that is a viable option as well. I said before on this show in a different context, they don't want to go to school, work camps where you're going to learn a trade, and you can probably carve out a pretty successful living and life if you have a skill that people will pay for, like people who lay tile, people who lay carpet, people who install drywall, electricians, plumbers, roofers, pavers. There's this growing sentiment that those jobs aren't good enough. Those are real jobs, folks. Let's see. 262, I agree with you on the school boards. You have totally flipped your opinion a year ago. No soccer moms are supposed to go in and voice their opinion. No, and that's not what I said. Listening is a skill. Listen better, be smarter. Anybody should be able to go in and express their opinion. Acting like a lunatic, and I'm going to actually do this topic later in the show, is not, in my mind, a smart choice. Because think about, and this is kind of a side issue, but think about that reality. If you're an elected official or a member of a community, and you see somebody ranting and raving like a lunatic, you can take their opinion seriously? I won't. Because you can't control yourself enough to make the points. And I did have people removed from council chambers because they acted like lunatics, borderline threatening. That's not appropriate conduct. Control yourself. It's okay to be mad. You can still be civil. Lisa joins us from Mequon. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Steve. I want to take you to task on that point you made about people who own assault weapons, but they're not criminal. And I contend that people like this woman who owned these weapons perhaps was not a criminal until she committed this heinous act, but she had a mental health break. And I would like to see these weapons, whether they are weapons for enthusiasts, collectors, you have no business owning these weapons. And who is to foretell that a mental health break would not happen while these weapons are in the hands of other people who really don't know they're having a mental health break or that they have no criminal background, period? Get these guns out of the public's hands, full stop.
Yeah, Lisa, no, it's okay to disagree, and I thank you for the call. Look, I get that point of view. People are angry and upset about this. There was a ban on these weapons, and just talking about facts here, which is what we do on this show. During that ban, we didn't have the explosion of mass shootings that we have now. After that ban, I think it was, I don't want to say the year because I'd be guessing. They've exploded. It's not even close. And yeah, again, nothing is absolute. There's no one solution. I could have the strictest mental health laws in the land, and somebody who has no prior history of mental health issues or violence could go and kill their family. Again, not a perfect world. What I'm trying to do is knock down the numbers, reduce the likelihood that someone's going to be slaughtered in a church, school, at a concert, wherever. These are hard, hard decisions to make. And again, I'm not a mental health professional. Could I have a person on the show? Yes. Somebody said, yeah, of course we could do that. But I'm trying to get your perspective and your understanding that if we're going to say those words, This is a mental health problem. Then that requires a commitment from us to push our legislators at any level. All right, fund it. And people got mad at me yesterday because I mentioned the Ted Cruz bill last year in 2022, which actually funded mental health professionals in schools, which basically got no hearing and no votes. And I don't even, I'm not even a fan of Ted Cruz. But put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to say these things, then you got to do something about them. Bottom line is, after this shooting, the latest of many mass shootings and school shootings, do I think anything's going to happen that's real? No. And I'm not sure at this moment what it would take to really have a change. I'm just telling you, there's a problem. And to deny that problem is to deny reality. Quick break.
You're listening to the Steve Scafidi Show on WTMJ.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
Spaceship to Debbie. Come in, Debbie. Traffic is slowing down.
Yeah, Captain, there's an accident 2 miles ahead. Take the next exit for a quicker trip.
Making it through Milwaukee traffic isn't rocket science. Debbie Lozaga is looking out for you on the roads.
Traffic has woken up. We have an accident. We got a little bit of heavier traffic. We got pockets of heavy traffic. Oops, that's going to be tacking on a couple extra minutes there.
Follow her on Facebook and Twitter, only on WTMJ.
Fleet Farm is your lawn care headquarters for everything from lawnmowers, string trimmers, fertilizer, soil, and more. This week only, get 4 bags of Superior Cedar Chips and Mulch for just $12. And on Saturday, April 1st, the first 150 customers get a chance to crack open an egg and save up to 30% off their entire purchase. Plus, from 10 a.m. until noon, the first 75 kids can decorate a Fleet Farm Easter pail.
I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Archbishop Lestecki here. Well, do you believe? This statement...
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour on this Wednesday Hump Day Edition. Hope you're doing great. Hope you're enjoying the day, the start of your day. For you late nighters, you might not even be up yet. Maybe the radio just kicked on. Maybe you had to wake up for something and you're listening to my show. So thanks for tuning in, even though you're half asleep. And thanks for finding us, however you do, over the air, online, podcast page. You guys are killing that podcast page. All of our shows, interviews, fun segments that we do. I'm going to kind of continue the conversation, but in a different way when it comes to mental health. A couple stories that one of them involves Aaron Rodgers. He often talks about keeping his sanity and improving his mental health. So I'm going to weave a legacy story about Aaron Rodgers into this mix. But and a couple quick ones, because I love the text line, the old National Bank talking text line, 855-616-1620. And so somebody sent me this, and I'll take it in the, I think the spirit it was intended, but I'm laughing. One of the things that, you have to have a bit of an ego to do a radio show, I think. And one of the characteristics that I've noticed among, hopefully not me, but hell, you can't be your own judge, is that a lot of people who do radio have a heavy, what I would call a narcissistic view of things. Exaggerated feelings of self-importance, excessive need for admiration, you know, that kind of stuff. I would say that's almost in some cases a requirement for radio hosts, especially in this market. So, and I looked it up because the texter asked me the question. Is a narcissistic personality disorder, is that a mental health condition? You know what the answer is? Yes. So even radio hosts, especially in this market, are not immune. And you can take that for what it's worth and you can make your own assessments on your own individual basis. All right. So a couple of takes. We'll get to the Aaron Rodgers one in a little bit. But I saw this story, one of my favorite websites. I talk about it all the time, studyfinds.org. And It asks interesting questions. It prevents interesting and presents rather interesting results, poll numbers, research data that suggests things. And here's what the interesting part of the story was for me. And it ran counter to what I thought about this. And you can join us on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line if you want to weigh in. 855-616-1620. Here's the headline. Here's why living in the country may actually hurt your mental health. I said I was going to stay on that story. And one of the common phrases you hear is the grass is always greener on the other side, right? Plenty of people talk about, I have friends who've done this, talk about moving away, moving to the country, retiring to a more natural, serene lifestyle. Well, University of Houston researchers looked at this, packing up, heading out urban areas to more rural areas. What'd they find? People in rural areas tend to be more anxious, more depressed, less open-minded, and more neurotic. Pretty interesting results. Additionally, people living in the country, lower levels of satisfaction and less purpose or meaning in life than those living in urban areas. Some of the factors, lack of mental health services, lack of a place to go to respond to any challenges. Why is this? Because since 2010, we've seen a lot of these rural hospitals go away. Heck, in Milwaukee, we may see major hospitals go away, given some of the stories that I'm reading away from the show on some of the providers we have here. 85% of all rural counties are dealing with a shortage of mental health professionals, despite the increase in demand for those services. Why does this matter, Steve? Because we're just talking about one of the reasons how this manifests. And again, it's not unique to rural areas, but there's this weird wishy-washy, you know, rainbowy look at country living like it's the answer to everything. And I always tell people one of the biggest reasons that some admit, some don't, is you want to save money on taxes. But I always inform them, as someone who led a city, less taxes usually means less services. So keep that in mind when you make the decision. And in the case of those folks who are moving to places like Texas and Arizona, there's some harsh realities that maybe not this year, but maybe next year, year after, next decade, you're going to be facing that aren't going to be pleasant. Because the taxes will catch up to you at some point. And if it's not taxes, because some of these places have no taxes, state tax, they'll get you in another way. Trust me, they always do. If I hear one more person tell me how Florida has no state income tax, they get you in other ways. Trust me. And maybe it's just the irritation of having to live with an alligator sitting in your backyard like my brother does every day. What good is a backyard, by the way, with an alligator sitting in it all the time? What good is that backyard? I couldn't ever have a kid out there with a 12-foot alligator out there. You can't let your dog out there. What sense does that make? But he loves the weather, so you be you, Brother Dave. 855-616-1620. Respond to the question posed here, though. This sort of dreamy love affair with country living, rural living. Oh, by the way, I didn't even get to this. Longer response times for emergency services, often on a volunteer basis. Does that matter? Might. Especially if you're the person that needs the services. 855-616-1620. Is the grass greener? Is country living all it's made up to be? Or is it actually contributing, this is the bigger point, to some of these mental health challenges we have in this country? It's a big statement. I made it. You respond after this.
Hey, all of you radio listeners. This is Max, and I'm on vacation, and I found a little time to squeeze in a joke of the week. How much does it cost a pirate to get his ears pierced? A buccaneer. Back to the Steve's Graffiti Show. West Virginia.
Thank you, young Max. Lots of energy, lots of enthusiasm, even on vacation. He sent me a picture yesterday. I don't know how he managed it, but he's got a comfortable seat in first class, and The kid's living a dream. He's in Florida right now, as a lot of others are. Enjoying himself, but he really enjoyed the first class and the meal they provided him. He was all jacked up about that. Ordered room service last night, which for him was a cookie and ice cream. That's like the best room service. Let's go to the phone lines on my conversation about mental health, country living. Is it all it's cracked up to be? You just heard from John Denver there, the late John Denver. Let's go to Armando in Kenosha. Welcome to the show, Armando. Happy Wednesday to you.
Hey, you too. Love your show.
Thank you.
I lived in Shawnee County for over 30 years, then moved back to Kenosha. You don't go to the farm. You live on the country because you have a purpose there. You know, as a guy was farming. Yes, I know we don't have the same services. We don't have the same things, but to live your life as a farmer and to do what you want to do every morning, it's, you can't beat it. You know, it's just like if you're in Milwaukee, if you're in Milwaukee, there are things you give up, right?
Sure.
It's just like rural living.
Do you think do you think, you said you lived there for how many years? 30 years?
30 years.
So did you ever feel like, getting to the point of the topic, did you ever feel like you were missing some services, especially things that maybe you needed, that you kind of had to sacrifice, or was it close enough?
Well, yeah, you do, but you also have to realize that when you live down here, you're sacrificing things too. I mean, I don't wake up and look at 200 acres.
Right.
I look at a block.
That's right.
So there are things that you give up. But yes, there are things, that could be better, and people do try to do things better in the rural counties. Especially farmers, they kind of be bullheaded, but you work through things.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Armando. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I want to get to another caller. Look, and on farmers, two things are happening at the same time. One of some of the hardest working folks of any occupation in this country. I acknowledge that each and every day. Their hours are crazy, and the work never goes away, and cows don't take breaks and all of that. Fields have to be plowed. Crops have to be planted. They have to be harvested. But at the same time that's happening, we see increasing rates of depression and mental health issues. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Jack from Caledonia joins us on the phone. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, how you doing today? And when you're living in the country, you have to be more self-sufficient. I'm not talking about living in a suburb of the country. I mean, in the country, you have to be more self-sufficient. You're responsible for your own safety. You're responsible for, if your house starts on fire, you got to stop it before the volunteers come out and put out the cinders. All these things that are always on you. But you do have a sense of freedom. You can do what you want when you want, and how you want to do it, what you want to do on your property. But the main thing is you're more or less isolated. And if you can handle that, if you grew up in that type of situation, it's not going to bother you. But I think somebody that moves to the city and, moves from the city to the county expects to have this romance of the county, they're going to be open for a rude awakening that there's a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah.
You got to worry about your well water. You got to worry about your well pump, your electrical. I mean, everything is on you because you don't have the services to, call somebody up and say, hey, we energies, my electricity's out.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Jack. And I think part of that story also is that maybe that push to self-sufficiency is a good thing. I'm just telling you some of the research that, at least in this case, University of Houston has done, it suggests that maybe it's not, and it's challenging people in ways they didn't think about. And one of the things I hear a lot about is people saying, I'm getting out of, wherever. We're going to go live in the country somewhere. We're going to go buy some land in Alabama or Tennessee, and, there's only so much land, folks. And I never understood the desire to go live in a place that you have no knowledge of, other than maybe visiting it once for a week. Uprooting your connections, your local connections, your family connections in some case, for some idyllic chase for some lifestyle that may or may not exist, for all the reasons I just laid out as part of this study. I mean, there's things like just agreeableness and openness, conscientiousness, neuroticism, right? All these are some of the personality traits that they talked about in this study, as well as well-being, life satisfaction. If you want to move the country, you can move the country. That's your call. But what I'm trying to point out is, as much as we debate the issue of mental health, mental disorders, I think it's a lot more widespread than we acknowledge. And I think we have to look at some of the contributing factors here. Sure, media plays a role. Somebody said that on the text on the old National Bank talking text. And yeah, absolutely. Vince and I had this conversation this morning. What should we show? What should we talk about? How do we approach these from the news talk perspective that are actually meaningful conversations, not the silly, nonsensical stuff? My guy's right on this issue. Your guys are all idiots, and you shouldn't have an opinion. And if you do, I don't care about it. That, you know, that's for far too long in this market and elsewhere. That's passed for like real conversation. That's fake conversation. You should run as fast and as far away from that as you can. I understand it's popular with some people. Who wouldn't want to have somebody always agree with you on everything? But the hardest thing for real leaders to do, or real talkers for that matter, is to tell people they're wrong. Even when they don't think they're wrong. Now, you can do it in a respectful way, and you can certainly respect their ability to share that opinion. That's, you don't want to cramp down on that. But having a educated, science-backed opinion on something, in my mind, and you can disagree if you want to, that's opinion, is more valuable than the alternative. Sam joins us from the north side of Milwaukee. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
You know, just going back to the farmers, I think my friends and I were just talking about this. If the world would be in a dire situation, the main survivors would be farmers. I mean, we have to salute them. In the city here, we're so dependent on the services and everything. If the world would shut down or this country, the farmers would be the ones to survive, not us.
I don't disagree with you, Sam. Thanks for the call. I think he's right. They are self. They can make it work regardless of it's all shut down. That's why, you know, I don't want to endorse this idea, but some of these prepper folks, you know, they're getting ready for doomsday or Armageddon, whatever it is. Having a plan is important, even if it's one that requires mass devastation to implement the plan or to utilize that plan. Simple things like having water that you can rely on when your water's cut. To his point, to Sam's point, we would lose our minds if electric was cut out for more than a week. If the roads were impassable for whatever reason. If all of our services were shut off, Wi-Fi, which will happen if electricity is shut off at some point. Water shut off. What are you going to do? What's your plan? Most people have no clue. And I thought about this when I was in the break. You look at what's happening in Ukraine. This valiant effort by its citizens to keep normal in spite of being bombed by a ruthless dictator from Russia, Vladimir Putin. They have to find ways to heat their what's left of their homes. They have to find water sources. They have to find food. I'm not sure that even in our country, which is one of the most developed nations on this planet, that we would be able to survive what they're going through. I said this to a friend last night on messaging. We're a country of complainers. We are less and less a country of doers. And what's required in situations is you got to do for yourself. So I will acknowledge the self-sufficiency of those folks who are truly out in the country, the farmers and the like. But again, getting back to the mental health piece, let's acknowledge that there's also challenges to that. That's why when you hear stories that rates of suicide or depression among those people, those groups, those sectors of our economy are increasing, that's one of the reasons why. We'll break here. Back with the bottom of the hour news after this on WTMJ. Hey, don't forget, tomorrow, that's what Steve said. Chance to win a Mind Shaft gift card. Why do I mention it today? Because tomorrow is the great buy one pizza, get a second one free offer. And on top of that, we give away a $30 gift card to make that happen for you. It's a great local family-owned restaurant the most affordable restaurant for over 46 years, Mein Chef on Main Street in beautiful downtown Hartford. We'll do that tomorrow at 11:08. That's what Steve said. Two contestants will battle over five questions that conceivably, theoretically, figuratively, could change your life. Not literally, figuratively. Scott Warris will be happy that I made that distinction because he always used to beat me up on that one. If he's listening, miss you, buddy. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We're talking about the country study, rural living, and the fact that maybe the grass isn't greener. Certainly there's more grass in the country versus the city. I think Mike has a different opinion. Hey, welcome to the show, Mike. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, Steve. Glad to be able to talk to you. I listen to your show all the time, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for that. I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, I live in the country. I work in the country. We raised nine kids in the country. We were able to have horses for the kids to ride. I can go hunting right out my back door.
Awesome.
We just love it out there. It's there's wildlife to be seen all the time, and I can't stand going into the city. I avoid it like the plague.
So let me ask you then. So when you hear studies like this, that it's real science. They look at some of the factors that I mentioned, right? Access to medical services, depression. What do you make of that? Because your reality is not the same as what that study's pointing to.
I think if I had to live in the city, that would be me. I just can't handle it. The country is so easy going. You know, I'm with John Denver. I thank God I'm a country boy.
Yeah. Did you grow up in that environment?
What kind of sort of? We lived. Well, it wasn't totally country, but it wasn't real suburbs actually either. But I'm a forester, and I live out near the woods, and it's a good life.
Absolutely.
My kids thoroughly enjoyed it. I wouldn't give it up.
Are your kids moving out, or are they still young enough to be at home?
No, they're all gone.
So have they made that same decision, or have they moved to the big city? Mine moved to the big city.
You know, most of mine did, too, and I scratched my head and was like, what's with these kids? I mean, didn't any of my values impart you?
kids are kids, man.
They enjoy coming home, though.
Yeah, they do. And I've been to Eagle. It's absolutely beautiful. Thanks for calling the show, Mike, and thanks for the kind words about the show. Look, is there a right answer? No. I'm just trying to make the point here that a larger point about mental health. It's so often talked about, but it's not taken seriously. There's not that next step. Now, I don't want to be absolute in saying that. There are some programs, including our current governor of Wisconsin has allocated some of those dollars that are quickly pouring out of the federal government at a rate too fast. That's unsustainable. My little quick op-ed on that. But they are trying to do the right thing. But doing the right thing at the right level is really more important. And we are not committing, even in rural areas, because one of the things the study pointed out is there's not enough mental health professionals for the issues they have to deal with. That's number one. And two, the suicide numbers and depression numbers, they don't lie. Those are real-life problems that people are facing. And obviously there's more to it than that. Loss of job, certainly. Loss of a spouse, absolutely. Challenges in your current field, whether it's farming or something else. Not everybody, as the texter pointed out, in the country works on a farm. Now, the chances are higher that they do, but there are plenty of people doing city-like jobs in the country because you still have to have services no matter where you live. Bottom line for me is we got to think about these things, and we have to invest in them. That's a long-term solution. Remember I was talking about the Foxconn story, long-term solution? Everybody focuses on the short. Where's those jobs? Get all worked up about that, not thinking that in the long term, these investments, infrastructure investments, in that case, economic side, mental health investments in this discussion, long term, actually funding programs and positions to help people, that's the answer. Which brings me to Aaron Rodgers. I'm just going to tee it up quickly, then we're going to go to break, and then we'll have a longer conversation about it. My fine producer, Brandon Snide, who is also the morning sports guy on Wisconsin Morning News, did one of his extra points. Was it about a month ago, Brandon? He did on Brett Favre. I did it again. I always do that. Aaron Rodgers. And the fact that people were hammering the guy because he was just trying to clear his head, get his head right for a very violent sport that he's really good at. And all the grief he took. And I'll make the case after the break that that's another example of what I'm talking about. Short term. What's he doing for me? Where's the Super Bowl? And you, if you listen to the show, you know I'm the biggest fan of Show Me Something. But I also understand there's complexity to these problems. And that's a classic sports demonstration of the sort of backhanded lack of acceptance of someone who's saying, real life, real time, hey, I got to get my head right to be good in sports. We'll have that conversation. You can join us, 855-616-1620, Old National Bank, talk and text line. The sports piece of this, another example. A lot of people talking, not a lot of people taking it seriously or listening after this. Let me just put this out there. Now, I understand the big money, and we'll get the call or two here that makes that case about Aaron Rodgers honoring contract, all that stuff. We'll get to that in a second. But is it understandable? Do you think that perhaps as much money as Aaron Rodgers makes or any famous person, that those individuals couldn't suffer the same mental health concerns? And I don't want to make a disorder, because I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers has a mental health disorder. I'm just saying he's somebody who's really cerebral and gets in his own head. He's told us that in numerous examples of him going off to pursue treatments, explorations of his own psyche, that perhaps it's just a casual, or sometimes not so casual, self-healing that's taking place there. So why would we assume that somebody who's making a ton of money be immune from all these things that we talked about, especially in the show today, like depression, like anxiety, like concern over one's own mental health? And why is that a bad thing? And I said this to a texter, because I like to respond to some of the texts during the breaks. Talk is cheap, right? So one of the things after a mass shooting, yeah. Mental health, that's the answer. Do something. Of course, there's no follow-up. Talk is cheap. Spending money to fix or resolve these issues is expensive. We haven't made that commitment. Dave from Greenfield joins us. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say, I mean, as much as I love Aaron, and I love seeing him play with the Packers, last year when he decided he was going to come back and sign a year contract, time to honor it. I mean, you shouldn't go in every year trying to decide if you want to come back or not. Because in the real world, if we sign a contract, we pretty much have to stick to it with our companies.
Yes.
And how would he like it if they said, Aaron, you had one of the worst years you've ever had. I think we're going to pay you $30 million instead of $50. Let me ask you how that would act, how he'd feel about that one.
Yeah, he wouldn't be happy.
No, absolutely not.
So look at it from a different perspective. Look at it from the, I don't want to say mental health, just say just the healthiness of his brain, sure, and his psyche. And do you think that he's been a happy Green Bay Packers player the last 2 or 3 years?
No, I don't think he has.
And
I don't think he has. I believe he's had some of the control over the play calling, but I don't think he's had all of it.
Or players.
I think he wants, right, mm-hmm, exactly. But I think he wants to be able to call the plays and change the plays when he feels like it. And I don't think he can do that. And I could see it last year when he was snarling at players.
Yes.
I mean, really. You remind me of Forrest Gray. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that.
Yeah. But he did a lot of snarling.
And he was almost like a growling bear out there.
Well, nobody's going to mess with Forrest Gray. He was a tough dude, man. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
But that's the way Aaron was. And when you do that with your players, they start losing confidence in you as a quarterback.
Yeah. Good stuff, Dave. Didn't mean to cut you off there, but I want to get to some of the texts. Thanks for the call. Look. I can separate this. Do I think he should honor his contract? You bet I do. But at some point, everything ends badly, right? To steal a line from a movie. Otherwise, it wouldn't end. It's pretty rare to have a happy separation. There's a reason why, and I dropped this information on the show last week, and you can call it a dazzling detail if you want, but there's a reason why MVPs don't get traded. It never happens. Literally never happens. So this idea that somehow the Packers were going to sell a MVP-caliber player at the most important position on an NFL football team is unrealistic and not substantiated by the history of the NFL. It never happens. Now, players have retired after winning. It happened a couple times. Jim Brown and, I think, Norm Van Brocklin come to mind. You really got to be old to remember Norm Van Brocklin. So that's not a reality. That's, I think, convenient Monday morning quarterbacking kind of opinion. But, and I don't want to speak for Aaron Rodgers. You know, if you listen to the show, I enjoyed his play for the years he played for the Packers. Longest tenured Green Bay Packers player, by the way, which is kind of impressive given the, you know, the Ray Nitschke's, the Forrest Gregg's, as the caller Dave mentioned, Bart Starr, Don Hutson. It's pretty impressive. Did anybody, and I'll ask it this way, did anybody think he wasn't giving his all in the football field? I didn't get that sense. There are things he did in the football field I think other football players were amazed by. There were games that ended with unbelievable endings because, not exclusively, but primarily because of Aaron Rodgers. So I can separate all of that. I can understand that maybe the guy's telling us, for whatever reason, clearing out his headspace, getting his brain all in, that maybe this exploration of ayahuasca or dark rooms, whatever that, you know, sensory deprivation, maybe that's how he does it, and maybe we shouldn't mock him for it. I'm happy that I get to watch him play. Just like I was happy I got to watch Brett Favre play and Bart Starr before him as a child. We are lucky. But bottom line is, since the 2010 season, and I know the Super Bowl was played in early 2011, for whatever reason, they were good enough but not great enough to get back to the Super Bowl. Not that it's easy. And if your head's not right, I don't think, even though you're getting almost there, that you're in the right space to be able to take that next step. And they certainly had the talents. They came close five or six times in those years. Is mental health a factor? Absolutely. I think, and if I take anything away from Aaron Rodgers and his probably soon-to-be departure from our team to the New York Jets, apparently, and not breaking any news, we don't know when that's going to happen. Maybe he's doing the right thing for Aaron Rodgers, and maybe that leads to a healthier life after football. But if you don't think mental health is part of this, I think you're missing something. Quick break. I will tell you that most of the text line disagree with me on the Aaron Rodgers take, and a lot, there's a lot of different versions of him. One said he's a nutcase. Diane says it's his character I can't stand. 414, Aaron Rodgers is an infant. ! Taylor from River Hills. I hate it when people say in the real world when referring to professional athletes or entertainers. It is their real world. It's not your real world. These people are elite at what they do and have the option of renegotiating contracts when most of us don't. People pay to watch them on television and to see them in person. You probably cannot say the same about your job. No, I think that's a good point. Fair point. Also, the incredible pressure on someone in a leadership position in pro sports has got to be immense. I've said this before. There's no way that I wouldn't, most of us, the vast majority of us, could do what Aaron Rodgers does, or any great athlete. Even a not-so-great athlete that's a pro athlete. We couldn't compete on that level. And I learned this firsthand when I watched from the sidelines a football game a few years back at Lambeau Field. And the skill level, the speed, the size, it's almost like it's, you don't know it, you don't recognize it on TV. But these guys are immense and fast and dangerous. And think about what goes into that. And the simple act of hitting somebody, and we're talking about football or lesser degree in some of the other sports, I think certainly takes a toll. It impacts their brain. And think about all the impacts that Aaron Rodgers has taken over the years. All those sacks, all those diving touchdowns where he got drilled or out of bounds plays. There's real science that says any football player playing at that level has some brain impact. And they might not know till later in life. They may know right away. That's why some people have stepped away. They've stopped that or tried to stop it. I'm just saying it's easy to throw this stuff around and to criticize. But mental health plays a role in almost every conversation we have, including, as a texter points out, that radio talk show hosts are mainly narcissists, perhaps. So take that with a grain of salt. Make your decisions accordingly. I just tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. All right, we got to queue up some phone callers because after the break, I love this hour. Ask Steve anything, any question, fair game. Sports, just talked about sports. Culture, entertainment, politics, gardening, clothing styles, whatever you want to talk about, it's fair game. I'll do my best to answer. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talking text line. What will we get, text or call, on this fabulous Wednesday? We got a busy day today. Lots of stuff to do, which is a good way to spend a Wednesday as we march through this week. And I told Vince earlier, I'm not wearing a coat, so spring, get here. I'm done with winter. Enough. Finito. Nope. Not going to have it. Is that declared enough? I think so. All right, ask Steve anything. After the news, which is next, right here on WTMJ.
Five letters here, just for everybody out there in Packerland and yourself today. R-E-L-A-X.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, everybody. Almost afternoon. It's probably afternoon in some places where you're listening, so thanks for tuning in. However you find us over the air, online podcast, all good, all the time. WTMJ.com or wherever you get podcasts. I give out my email for a reason, steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D at WTMJ.com, because I hear from people all over the place, including other countries, who find us and listen to some or all of the show. So I appreciate that. I don't even know if that's measured in some way. Do they measure that kind of rating? I don't know. So thanks for all those long-distance listens and for those local listens as well, because I know we are the biggest stick in the state, as they say. All right. We're doing something that we do most Wednesdays. Ask Steve anything, any question, fair game. Any questions, okay? Politics, culture, sports, medicine, vaccine technology. Now, I'll do my best. I'm not a scientist, not a psychiatrist, but I will do my best to figure out the answer to your question. In most cases, I have at least have a thought, which is kind of the point. So 855-616-1620. Somebody asked about the political ads that run on the station and a lot of stations. So the question is sort of, those political judge ads are some of the worst and most annoying you've ever heard on. Can you comment? Yeah, they're crazy. And I was listening to the one that had sort of a Western feel to it. And so I was thinking to myself out loud in my head, if you're Dan Kelly, maybe you craft like a Law and Order Clint Eastwood type response, like you're feeling lucky, punk. How about that? That's kind of the response. Law and Order is a popular theme. Crime, doing something about crime. Those are popular themes. Maybe that's perhaps where he should go. Now, he's challenged because he's got less money. And you didn't ask this question, but I'm going to answer it anyway. This argument about where money comes from is disingenuous and dishonest. So if you hear someone, especially a talking head, talking about it, ignore it. Both sides in this race, both sides in most general elections, are getting out-of-state money. Now, the difference is the volume, which that's a valid point. But don't like say that, they're getting all this out-of-state money. They both do it on both sides of this race. Trust me. One of the biggest donors to the Dan Kelly campaign is from Illinois. Now, they have a big business in Wisconsin, but they're from Illinois. I believe they live in Lake Forest. Swanky Lake Forest. So take that for what it's worth. All right. A international question to lead us off on the phones. Gianni from Montello. Good morning, Gianni.
Good morning, Steve. Hey, I'm sure you're aware of what's going on in France.
Yes.
They've raised the retirement age from 62 to 64, which is fractional. I think most Americans work well into their 60s. What is happening there? What's your take on it? And is this just something of a 20-something angst that these people feel they just have to riot? And do they have jobs in the first place? Maybe it's a moot point.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Johnny. That's a great question. So, I mean, if you haven't heard the stories, they are literally rioting in the streets over this change. And now, here's the tricky part. Obviously, every country's different. Their laws are different. Their implementation of new policies or new laws are handled in different manners. We have legislative groups. And they do in France, too. But apparently, the president of France, Macron, has succeeded, although having riots in the streets brings that into question, with changing that law, that allowance for retirement age, without actually going to the voters or having a law passed. And I'm not going to get deep in the weeds on this, but the Constitution allows him that opportunity, and he took advantage of it. So, that being said, could he do it? Yeah, he did it. Now, the bigger question, are these people just protesters? I think it's more than that. I saw some great video, great in quotes, of diners in France with like bonfires in the streets outside of them, and which would be rather unsettling to me. And again, having been to France on three occasions, it's a much different country than ours. Their perspective on retirement, their perspective, which is kind of a universal theme in Europe, on time off is much, if not radically different than ours. They look at vacation time as a guaranteed right. And it's much more liberal than our policies, where we look at it, a typical person has, what, 2 or 3 weeks off? They have months off, often. And they retire at a generally much lower age than we do. They also have a different retirement system, one they pay into, one they get from the government, and other variations on the theme. And there's kind of like a three-legged stool on how that all works. So they are well compensated, generally, and they generally have a lower cost of living than we do, inflation aside. So they can afford to have a pretty comfortable retirement existence. And I'll just put it this way, because we're having a similar conversation here, but in a different direction, right? We're talking about raising significantly the age, and we're even asking the question, should our taxpayers contribute to their own individual program based on extra contributions? We won't even have that conversation. It's a non-starter. So it's a long-winded answer to a real question. I don't know how they figure this out. The law's been changed. The president, Macron, had that right by the Constitution. The question is, what will the people do? And right now, they're not real happy. Let's see. Matthew joins us from Oshkosh. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, we're partying.
All right.
Question I've got for you is, I don't know if you watched it last night, but I caught the end of that Badger game, and it was pretty horrific. Do you think Greg Gard is gone after the season? Because football and hockey are both homegrown. We're both homegrown coaches, and they didn't survive. What's your take?
Yeah, good question. Thanks for the call, Matthew, and thanks for the listen as well. I don't think he's going to get fired. I think there's a lot of loyalty to Coach Gard. That was pretty pathetic, though. I think they went, what, 9-plus minutes without scoring any points? That cannot happen in a basketball game. I don't care what's required. It cannot happen. And it's been a fit-filled season of stop and starts with this team anyway. And you got to give them credit. They won a couple NIT games, right? Two games they won? I think so. They should have won a game yesterday. And the fact that they didn't does speak to some degree to the level of coaching. But, players shoot. Players got to make their shots. And I just think there's enough loyalty to Greg Gard that they're not going to fire him. I got a phone call, but I'm going to the text line quickly. Why is there a wall on 94 southbound that's 2 miles long so you cannot exit on College Avenue? You're talking about the College Avenue exit going southbound on 94. That wall's been there forever. It used to be like this literal plant wall where they actually had spaces built in for living plants, and then it collapsed one day. Here's one thing I know about walls on freeways. They look good for about 5 years. Then after that, not so much. Why do we have walls? To separate freeway noise from neighborhoods. And just to make a blanket assessment that may or may not be based in fact, generally the better neighborhoods have walls. The not as nice neighborhoods don't have walls. And you can take that for what it's worth. My complaint about freeways, to be off point a little bit here, is they're entirely filled with too much garbage. You want a job for all those knuckleheads who are stealing cars? Make them pick up garbage on a freeway. We'll take your questions and your calls. Chuck, you're up next, Southside. Old National Bank talking text line 855-616-1620. It's called Ask Steve Anything. We'll do that after this. Ask Steve Anything, any question, fair game. What's your question? Any subject is welcome and appreciated. 855-616-1620 on this Wednesday edition. Chuck joins us from the south side of Milwaukee. Hi, welcome, Chuck.
Hi, Steve. I got a good question for you. You know, I keep on hearing politics talking about China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, about them interfering with anything and everything. But I own two credit cards and two pieces of equipment. And when I want to talk to somebody, I'm either talking to somebody from India or Pakistan. I can't tell you which one. But they know everything about me. And the companies are pushing these material out to these two countries. I don't get no American service. How come we're not worried about those two countries knowing everything about me and how many other Americans are doing are giving their information out?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chuck. And I guess simple answer is I don't like it. You know, I've been in the same situation, mainly with my former provider of internet and television. And I would often say, look, I'm not either understanding you or you're not understanding me. And you know, if you're doing a chat, which is kind of the convenient way for a lot of these businesses to do this. Now, I can't even understand what you're typing in the little text box. So I'll ask for, give me something that's local. And often it's a convoluted process, but often I do get that call. Often they'll call me back later. This is one more thing that I understand the economic piece of this. Businesses, they fell in love with all this stuff. Call centers in India and other countries. Not a fan. Sorry. Now, getting someone to do those jobs, again, in the States, is a challenge. But like a lot of other things, when did we become bad at problem solving? We used to excel at that. Figure it out. Because customer service matters. We heard Vince and I talking about this morning. About a problem and how one company, in his case, dealt with it. I don't like it. And I think as much as we talk about globalism and working with other countries, there's a place for that. There's also a place to have some of these things, these essential services, and I would call customer service an essential service, done right here. Just like I want to see computer chips made here and cars made here. And parts for cars made here, steel made here. Because when we had those realities, that's when I think the country worked the best. James joins us from the South Side. Welcome, James. Ask Steve Anything. What's your question?
Yeah, you seem like you fly or you move and everything else. Have you ever decided to get your license to fly or meet people that have been in aviation, or maybe even when you were younger, maybe even become an astronaut or have met any astronauts?
Interesting question. Thanks for the call, James. No, and one of my good friends, Gary, who I actually owe a return call to, just reminded myself, is a pilot and has worked at the commercial and private. And that never appealed to me, although I've flown with him many, many times in a lot of different aircraft, including an open air one point, which is amazing. It never appealed to me. I don't know if I don't trust myself or I like to be the passenger in that situation, and I would never be smart enough or skilled enough to be an astronaut because those are special, special people. So I'll defer to those folks that have those skill sets to be really good at it. From the 414, lots of questions on the text line. You're welcome to join us as well on the phone, 855-616-1620. If Trump is the nominee and loses again, you think he will accept the results? Does anybody think he's going to accept the results? He hasn't accepted 2020 yet. Why would 2024 be any different? And my thinking on this has actually shifted a bit. And I've said from as long as I can remember that Trump is a boat anchor for Republicans. You can nominate him, and I've gone from he won't be nominated to I think he might be. So that's the shift. But if nominated, he will lose for all the reasons that we either know about now or we'll find out in the next year and plus. And the question for me is what will Republicans do? How will they process that information? Because I know at any one time there's 30% of the population, maybe a little bit higher than that, that love Trump and will vote for him again enthusiastically. But that doesn't win you a national election. If you're talking about Wisconsin elections, and I think this is somewhat the Trump effect, also I would say voters in Wisconsin saying they don't like one-party rule, Republicans have lost 14 out of the last 17 state or national elections in Wisconsin, from Wisconsin voters. It's a pretty sad record. And there's a lot of reasons for that, which I'm not going to delve into now. But one of them is voters are smarter than we think sometimes, and sometimes they're dumber than we think. I know those are two opposing positions. But in Wisconsin, I think there is some magic to the divided government thing, as painful as that is, because as we know, in Wisconsin, divided government means inaction, not action. All right, one break here, and we'll come back. More questions. We'll break for the bottom of the hour news. Ask Steve anything. We'll take it around the bottom as well if you still got want to ask some questions and have some good ones. We'll break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ. We've got time for a couple more questions before the bottom of the hour news. From the 414, Steve, I've been hearing a lot about artificial intelligence recently. It sounds very scary as far as the capabilities go. What are your thoughts? Interesting you asked that question from the 414. My daughter Katie is like a she has her own talk show. She lives in Illinois and is very attuned to this issue. And she has the same concerns I do, that there's an explosion of artificial intelligence, some of the software that's available now. And a lot of us, I don't, because I don't generally want to take the risk, but people, they go to these apps and they allow them to use their imaging and change it, make them look better, and they end up posting it on a social media platform. That's the basic stuff. But there's thoughts that, like, Instagram could go away because there's no way to validate the content that's on Instagram, especially when you're talking about videos and images. Anything could be faked, including graphic images using your face in situations you would never be involved with. That's how good the technology is. And the concerning part for me is the inaccuracy, the sharing of data, and the lack of privacy. All these things, major concerns. Are there elements of that are pretty cool? Yeah. And you've seen it play out in movies, of course. Some of the technology that's available that makes the unbelievable believable and look amazingly realistic. That's some of the good stuff. But the bad stuff is you can't trust anything. You can't trust anybody, even to the point of being afraid to click on any link anymore. And if you're somebody that's vested, either from an economic perspective or otherwise, in someone clicking on your page or your link, that's bad for business. But if you can't trust it, I'm going to be pretty cautious about doing that. Hopefully that answers your question. We'll squeeze Dave from Caledonia in here. Welcome to the show, Dave. Ask Steve anything. What's your question? Go ahead.
How come nobody is talking about Nikki Haley, who has already declared her candidacy for president? I get all kinds of emails from her campaign, but nobody else is talking about the lady.
I will talk about it right now. Thanks for the call, Dave. Look, I wrote in Nikki Haley in two elections. So I'm more than happy to talk about her. The reason she's not getting more attention, she's not a front runner. If you pay attention to the race so far, and it's pretty early, but maybe not, given the scope and length of these run-ups to campaigns now, it's Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. Now, I would argue there's a chance that Trump might not be the candidate, but we'll see how that plays out. And Ron DeSantis might essentially blow up his own camp just dealing with the Donald Trump reality. Is there an opportunity for Nikki Haley there? Yeah, sure. It's also one of the reasons I supported her is because I think there's value in a Republican ticket having a woman at the top of it, something that doesn't happen very often in my party. So I think there's a lot of value with a Nikki Haley candidacy. We'll see. Again, so much of that story and your question depends on what happens with Trump and what happens with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. To be determined. We'll continue on your questions. Ask Steve anything after the break, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Ask Steve anything, your chance to ask me the questions. Generally, I pick the topics. Now you can pick them. For example, somebody asked me about write-in. And actually, a few people did because I mentioned the Nikki Haley write-in. I understand she's not going to win the race. But I have to also feel good with my choices. And until the rest of you are making smarter choices with the nomination of candidates that I have to pick from, I'm going to do my thing. Not interested in Hillary Clinton, not a voter for Joe Biden, and certainly not a voter for Donald Trump. So I had to make my own decisions. You give me some better choices, we'll have a conversation about it. There's a process. But understand, your candidate's probably not going to win the race, and more likely it's an exercise. And just feeling good about your vote and disregarding the implications on a large scale, because that'll probably make you feel bad. You can't generally ask a poll worker about that process, but you can't ask for a list of registered write-in candidates. Why is that? Because they can't sort of advertise for a candidate or promote a candidate, but they can provide you the list. I don't want to make more work for them, so I don't want to belabor the point. But there's a process in getting on the ballot. And the thought process to making that not something they necessarily want to promote is that those people did the hard work to get on the ballot. They probably deserve the attention of voters. But there are ways to do it. If you have a question, call your local city or county clerk, village clerk, and they will answer that question for you. John from Milwaukee has a question about flags. Hey, John.
How you doing today?
I'm good. So what's the question?
What is ever happening with the revision to the city's official flag? That thing's been going on for years and years, and there was a flag design that had been semi-approved, and then they rescinded that, and so where is the revision of the city flag process?
Thanks for the call and the question, John. Best knowledge that I have is that the process is not actually ongoing. It's just kind of in a status quo. And there was a popular city flag that a lot of people were flying. And there was an earlier version, which was kind of jumbled and not that attractive. And then there was a better one that I thought would be just fine. And then some people objected to that. So I think the best I can answer is it's a conversation that's not really taking place. And if somebody from the Milwaukee Common Council or somebody that's in the know has a better answer for that, just send me a text at the Old National Bank talking text line, 855-616-1620. Mike from Milwaukee, welcome to the show, Mike. Ask Steve anything. What's your question?
Well, I'm going to talk about the shooter in Nashville, and
sure.
The Republican response yesterday was that it was not the guns, it was the mental health. And I would argue that if that person walked into that school with no guns, with the mental health problems, there would be six people alive. I wonder what you think.
That's a great question, and I did sort of talk about that a little bit in the 9 o'clock hour today. That whole ignore it, it's not a guns problem, I think is specious and sort of lazy from an elected official perspective. And if definitely not answering questions about this, I think, is super lazy. And if you're not going to answer questions, why are you there? Why are you actually there? Why are you serving? Of course, guns matter because that's the tool being used. Now, you can make a case, an argument, that if it wasn't an AR-15, it would be something else. If it wasn't a gun, it would be like in the case of the UK knives. But you can't kill that many people that quickly with a knife, generally. So also sort of a specious argument. And what I talked about this morning and what I'll sort of answer with now is, of course, guns matter. Because we're talking about someone using that choice of weapon to kill innocent children and adults. So you can pretend that it doesn't matter, But it does. Just because you ignore it or don't want to talk about it or just want to go to the mental health answer, which I talked about extensively on the program today, doesn't mean you're really addressing the problem. As I said, it's a complex answer to a very complex problem, violence. Per capita, we have more gun violence than any place on earth. More guns than any place on earth. If the answer was more guns, we would be one of the safer places on earth. So then we have to ask the question that's in more detail. Why is that? Well, certainly mental health's part of it. Crazy people shoot up schools, churches, concerts, grocery stores. It's part of it. Easy access to guns from people that shouldn't have them. Very relaxed gun laws. Very inaccurate background checks. Inconsequential background checks that don't capture violent offenders. I said it yesterday. Somebody asked me directly when we were talking about this. The what should or what can we do question. We can make it really hard, if not impossible, for people who shouldn't have access to weapons, guns, to get guns. You commit an act of violence with a gun, you should never be allowed to have a gun again. And if somebody sells you a gun knowingly, you're going to pay the same penalty. And we're starting to see that, as I pointed out yesterday, with the case of the parents of the Michigan school shooter. The fact that the parents are now charged with manslaughter. That might make you angry, but that's where this is going to go. If you want to pretend it's not a problem, which some talking heads still do to this day, expect the answer to be found in other areas and in other ways. And you're not going to like it, but I can tell you the tide is turning. It's a slow turn, but it is turning. And that's something they're going to have. Gun rights advocates, Second Amendment advocates are going to have to face that reality. Because at some points, public opinion changes. At some points, makeup of courts will change. It always does. It always does. Left, right, liberal, conservative, it always changes. Nothing is status quo. The only thing status quo, let me correct myself, the only thing status quo is too many people are being killed in schools and churches and concerts and grocery stores and cities across America. That's the one thing that never changes. Can we do something about it? Maybe. Quick break. Get those questions in for Ask Steve Anything. We've got a few minutes left before we hand it off to Jeff Wagner. Steve, do you think there is any chance Paul Ryan would get in the race for president? No. Actually, not. This is me saying this, not Paul Ryan. Not as long as Donald Trump is a viable, in some people's mind, candidate for president. It's not worth the exposure, the nonsense. And frankly, the candidacy, real or imagined or whatever, of Donald Trump, it's not a positive for the Republicans. I know there's a lot of people that like Donald Trump, love Donald Trump, and I just saw a poll on Fox that said of GOP voters they polled, 76% want Donald Trump to be president. And that's just diehard Republican voters. Given that reality, you're not going to see the Paul Ryans and the Nikki Haley's, I think, reach the highest position in the country. Just don't. Robert says, or I'll let him say it. Robert from West Dallas. Good morning.
Hey, long time no talk. Hope you're having a good day. I'm listening to all your very, very serious questions. I just thought I'd lighten it up with something. I've always wondered, being a mayor of a city, when you are out of office or retire or whatnot, I just wonder, is there some sort of like, pension plan, or, you know, did they set you up with like a 401k? You know, is there anything that comes after that for compensation? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be brutally honest. I'll let you hang up and listen to the answer. So you're a part of the WRS, the Wisconsin Retirement System. But mayors in Oak Creek and a lot of other communities are part-time. So I had a contribution as a mayor for 5 years and however many years I was an alderman. So I had a small accumulation of funds in the Wisconsin Retirement System, which didn't add up to more than like $15,000 or something. But so that's a benefit. Obviously, there's benefits from awareness and experience that I utilize every day. I couldn't speak to issues of developments or shared revenue or many of the other things I talk about without having, in my world, having that kind of experience. And I'll, little inside baseball, so much of what passes for news talk, not really at this station, but other stations in this market and elsewhere, is uninformed. Because people confuse having a loud voice with having real experience. And if your only experience in life is shouting or yelling on a microphone about politics, your real life experience doesn't qualify you to have these judgments. That's where the whole narcissistic thing kicks in from our earlier conversation. You think you know, but you don't know. That's why the lack of knowledge on shared revenue, the lack of knowledge on the real life impact of Act 10, something I supported, by the way, and its long-term implications for city budgets and services. You're starting to feel the effects. Real life, real time, local leaders are trimming services, cutting services, counties and cities and villages, that you're not going to like because the cost of government doesn't go down. They've done about as much of the doing more with less as they can do. Trust me. I know dozens of local leaders, counties, cities, villages. And when I see a unified voice from the most liberal to the most conservative on that issue, that's where real life experience actually has an opinion that's worthy of being broadcast. That's why I bring them on the show, whether it's a county, County Executive Josh Shulman from Washington County, or local mayors, or the mayor of Milwaukee. This idea that we're somehow going to shut down cities, or what is this weird version of life where people all move to the country? It's not going to happen. The engine of the state is right where I sit in Milwaukee. That's not going to change anytime soon. So the quicker you understand that and work with those communities, and I'm encouraged by what I'm hearing from the Speaker Vosses of the world and Mayor Cavalier Johnson, that's a good thing. And county leaders and local leaders, they seem to be saying the right thing. Can they make it work? We'll find out. But at the end of the day, we have to fix this. Do city and local leaders make bad decisions? Of course they do. Counties do as well. Look at the pension scandal and problem in Milwaukee County. It's going to kill this county. Is it irreversible? I don't know. I think so. But it requires real work, not pointing fingers, not shouting over microphones. None of that matters. It's talking to their actual leaders and then putting a plan in place. This us versus them nonsense that's passed for discourse in this community and elsewhere is a waste of your time. Trust me on that. Ask a real leader, not a talking head. There's people that are really good at talking. There's a lot less people who are really good at getting the actual work done. We'll take a break. We'll see what Jeff's going to talk about after this on WTMJ.